October 4th, 1959, the United States Navy shut down its advanced pilot training program in the belief that air-to-air missiles would soon make dogfighting obsolete. By 1968, the air-to-air loss rate over Vietnam had become so lopsided that the Navy restarted its program to try to get its pilots back up to the standard they'd thrown away nearly 10 years earlier. The flyers call it Top Gun.
Hello and welcome to Ribbon of Memes, episode 165. Wow, and that is more entertained than I was during the whole of this film. We are pushing ourselves right into the danger zone, and going back to 80s-tastic Cold War propaganda for Top Gun. Though you probably got that from the intro. This is a 1986 little-known story of... who am I kidding? Everyone knew about it. It was massive. And I have somehow managed to avoid it, because I thought I would hate it, but I have finally watched it some 39 years later, and I hate it.
So we had two reasons for considering this. One was the recent Top Gun Maverick, and the other was that when I look up the biographies of actors in films that we watch for this, very often this was one of their early roles. It was a huge budget film. It has a lot of minor cast.
Yes. Yes, it does. Yes. So this is the... I don't want to use the word story because there isn't one. Sorry.
This is 1986. It's about the last year you could reasonably claim that there was going to be a Soviet Union forever and ever, basically the way it is now.
Now, we never explicitly stated that the antagonists are the Soviets, but they are.
They are using supposedly Soviet aircraft. They are, of course, using F-5s painted black. But
This is the tale of... Oh, I can't bear. Of Maverick, who is
he's a pilot. He doesn't play by the rules.
There's a clue in the name, I guess. And he's
dangerous.
Been sent...
Give me a gun and your badge.
I mean, by the end of the film, he does develop a dimension, I suppose. I think, no, that suggests some character progression, which I think is entirely absent. He starts the film as a young pilot who thinks he's the best. He ends the film as a young pilot who finds out he's second best, but he's gone to acknowledge his homosexuality and his deep love for... No, it never acknowledges any of that, but... I don't even know.
But he understands the true purpose of the fighter aircraft, which is to transport his genitalia from one place to another.
I mean, the whole... Okay, the young fighter pilots, they've been selected because the... Okay, the main... There's a limited amount of acting you can do when you're in a fighter plane and you've got all the helmet and the oxygen mask on and everything, so... In this film, characters express their extreme emotional distress by blinking a lot. So,
and sometimes grunting.
And sometimes grunting. The super-duper hot pilot has an attack of the blinks during the opening scene and so can no longer go to Top Gun, where the top pilots are taught how to be even topper pilots than they were before.
Yeah, but let's just hold that for a moment because, oh boy, that opening scene...
Oh, all that. So this is the scene I presume you're talking about with all the planes. Oh, wait, I forgot to say this film pissed me off within 3 seconds because it says Inshore instead of Enshore on the opening title, which is a typo. I agree, Roger. You have correctly pointed out to me you can say Inshore. There is a constitutional.
It is very archaic.
Yes, I don't think they were going for archaic language in the opening scene of Top Gun. I think they just fucked it up. And I was proved right because they correct the typo in Maverick. Anyway, that already annoyed me. But yes, then we have the opening scene on the aircraft carrier.
I could probably do an entire podcast just on this scene. We've got all this, you know, orange-tinted steam blowing over the carrier deck and manly men doing manly things.
And technicians doing technical
the
things.
The jet blast deflector being erected and so on. But the thing that really struck me this time was Futurist Manifesto.
Yes, you said this offline. And then you sent me the Futurist Manifesto.
Specifically, we wanted to glorify war, the only cure for the world, militarism, patriotism, the destructive gesture of the anarchist, the beautiful ideas which kill, contempt for women.
So futurism, do you want to touch on what futurism is? Where it came from?
It was basically an artistic movement of the early 20th century. That's the easy thing to say.
That's kind of you. Did it come out of Italy in the 20s?
Largely. I think it would be fair to say that aesthetically it was aimed industry beautiful.
Okay.
You know, dynamism, speed, technology. The aeroplane is an amazing thing. The industrial city is a beautiful thing in itself because it is doing a job.
So it's a movement that glorifies technology, masculinism...
specific image of masculine.
Glorifies war and disdains just about everything and everyone else, particularly and especially women.
Yeah, I mean, it is to some extent reacting against the perceived softness of other artistic movements.
So this was around about the time of the Bohemian movement in Germany, I guess. So this is basically the anti-Bohemian movement, as far as I can tell.
But also, I mean, Jacob Epstein's Torso Metal from Rock Drill, or just Rock Drill was the original thing, is also in that sort of style. It is saying this Rock Drill, which just casually picked up at a scrap shop, is itself a beautiful thing, and we're going to attach the torso to it.
I see. Okay. And here we have an entire opening scene that really, yes, as you say, sepia-toned, as is much of the rest of the fucking film.
This is before colour grading has really been invented. In that there is a theoretical justification for it in that it's happening at dawn. But
yes, but the entire rest of the film
is warm, reassuring orange tone.
It is. These are the good guys, and this is, I don't know, it's kind of going for nostalgia without any... Maverick maybe earns that a bit more, but we'll talk about Maverick later.
And everybody is working together to do a single thing, which is a very... sorry, the thing I haven't said about futurism. It did slightly come a cropper with the First World War. all of a sudden, whoa, some sorts of industry aren't beautiful. But the remnants of it do rather tie into fascism.
Yes. Well, the good thing about being a fighter jet...
There are some very compatible ideas there.
Well, they did fold into Mussolini's Italy at some point.
Yeah.
The good thing about being a fighter pilot is you don't get to see all the messy bits. You just see the big fun explosion bits instead.
And all the little people have to do their jobs exactly right for you to do your thing.
Yeah.
Which is the most dangerous and most important thing.
Yeah, you're doing the best thing. You're doing the most fun thing, and you feel the need indeed for speed. Oh, God, I hate this film so much.
I mean, file this next to Went the Day Well and Alexander Nevsky. It is such utter propaganda.
Well, this is a propaganda in the same way that Battleship Potemkin was, but at least that had... I don't even know. It didn't. It wasn't Top Gun. That's the main thing I can say about it. I mean, we are introduced to the other fighter pilots, and the other one who has a dimension is Iceman. Now, Iceman's obviously a dick. I've jumped too far ahead.
Yeah, they do heroic things. Like they go up. The basic idea here is that they are intercepting incoming aircraft to the carrier group.
Yes,
this is quite a standard thing in the real world. You know, you declare a whatever exclusion zone. Anybody who starts coming close to that, you go up and take a look at them.
Mm.
Anybody actually breaks it, you shoot them down.
Mm.
But so okay, yeah, there are incoming aircraft, and they go up to take a look, and there is a certain amount of dick waving on both sides. You know, I will maneuver as if I'm about to attack you. I will lock you up with my missile guidance radar as if I'm about to shoot a missile at you.
Saber rattling.
both sides are, in fact, we assume, under rules of engagement that say they can only shoot if they are shot at first.
Yes. Which is well, quite, it, which does, is quite it doesn't escalate.
No, it's different later. But
yes, in this, his friend has his blinking attack.
Basically, what they're effectively doing, I mean, I could see how a role-playing game could model this. You know, basically, I will do a stressful thing, and then if you have to do the stressful thing yourself or back down.
Yes.
And if you manage that, you do a more stressful thing, and then I have to match that or back down.
I've hit my stress breaking point.
And one of the good guys fails to match it. So not only is he feeling distinctly unhappy, but he is having trouble getting sorted out for the carrier landing. Which little bit of real world trivia: they monitored a bunch of fighter pilots during the Vietnam War, and they had higher heart rates and other stress indicators during carrier landings than they did during actual combat.
During combat,
night carrier that landings makes sense. Even more so.
Yes, but and anyway, they've got very limited fuel, and so if he doesn't land now, they're going to drop into the ocean.
They've got very limited fuel, presumably because they have been engaging in combat manoeuvring at fairly long range. So basically, what is the guy's name? Yeah, expendable pilot.
Well, the Blinky Man. I couldn't tell you, and I don't care. Sorry, but he's the one who's off to Top Gun.
Cougar, who was going to be getting the special posting to the actual advanced pilot training.
So why is Maverick so fucking cocky when he's not the best pilot anyway?
The thing is, this is where we show that Maverick is a good guy because he is in the slot to land first. And he realizes that Cougar is not going to be able to make the landing without assistance, so he deliberately takes off again without slowing down.
It's his saving the cat moment, I guess.
And then goes in and flies beside him to talk Cougar down, and then lands himself on the no fuel he has left. A little technical detail, it takes several seconds to lower or retract an arrestor hook, so if you're deciding as you are hitting the deck that you want to keep flying, it is far too late.
Right. I did wonder about that. Yes. Okay.
But anyway.
Okay. Okay. Then they go to Top Gun, which is in, where is it? I some sunny.
In this date, it is in Nevada.
Nevada, I thought so. Okay. And they meet all the other Identikit pilots.
Sorry. I'm
just trying to rush through it.
There's so much Big and Sandy. Yeah, in these days it was in Miramar, Naval Air Station Miramar, which is basically the other side of San Diego from the ocean. We will come back to this. It's quite important.
I should ask. So this film is lauded for its kind of aerial scenes.
They actually got the U.S. Navy to cooperate.
Yes, yeah. So they hired these planes.
You can see why.
I mean, I'm perhaps not best placed to judge because I, as you may tell, I'm not very interested in planes. And so to me, what it looked like was planes flying past fast in the sky and then a shot of a man who I can't tell who it is, except that he's got his name written on his helmet, which helps.
Also, helmets are painted differently, which is also true to life as it happens.
Yes, fair enough. So, because if you're ever in a film, you need to be identified more easily. And they were either blinking or not blinking and looking over their shoulder and looking round. And this goes on for some time. And to me, that is like watching a washing machine complete its cycle. I do not care. Perhaps I'm the wrong person. How did you feel the aviation scenes were handled? I have read that they give a good sense of place and combat and where they are, and you understand what's happening. I didn't really get any of that, but
the thing is, this is not really something that human eyeballs are equipped to deal with.
I would have thought, because everything's so far away and you're moving so fast, I wouldn't have thought there is actually that much to see, but I don't know. Does this seem accurate to you?
I mean, for reasons of plot, they are mostly operating at infrared missile or gun range.
Yeah, they're pretty close range.
Which is fairly close range. So, yes, I mean, you do have to physically track with your eyeball where the opposing aircraft is.
How realistic, how often do those kind of situations occur in modern fighting?
Well, you try
combat?
To avoid them. I have a whole thing about the F-14, but shall we leave it till later?
Yes, okay, yes.
The thing is, in short, what it was designed for was to shoot an extremely long-range radar-guided missile.
That's what I thought. If you're in dogfight range, you've already failed.
However, in this it's sadly realistic because it turns out if you destroy an enemy airliner because it was too close to your ship, people get all annoyed, and they ended up with. You know, that's enemy airliner in the sense that not American, you understand, obviously. but it turns out that what they ended up having to do quite a lot of was, here is an unknown contact, which is incidentally a bogey. It's not a bandit until you've identified it as an enemy.
I remember that from... I used to love Wing Commander, the computer game. But that's because I was playing it, not watching some other fucker play.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But basically what they ended up doing was quite a lot of, here is this thing out on pushing the edge of our exclusion zone.
Go and have a look at it.
We will send you out to take a visual look at it.
Okay. Okay. So that's
in fact is one reason why the F-14 has a thing that is never seen in this film, which is a dirigible telescopic low light TV camera.
Ooh.
So what you're actually supposed to do is get out to quite a long way off still from the enemy.
Deploy your camera.
And get a really good picture of it and say, okay, that is definitely a fighter aircraft or whatever. And then you wait for it to come to you and say, right, you've bust the zone, mate, bye bye.
Okay.
But they don't do that in this because it's not manly enough. but yeah, so the other thing is the guy in the back seat. His basic job is to run the radar. The F-14 has a really good radar.
Yeah,
and it is designed for tracking multiple targets and picking out what they are and assigning missiles to them and things like that. Again, we don't really see that in this because it's about the heroic pilots. All right, personal anecdote time. My father's on an occupational health course, which turned out to be happening at an airbase at the same time that there was some, I think it was tornado training going on. Specifically, tornado training for foreign guests from Arabian countries which might be persuaded to buy the tornado.
Okay.
So basically, each pair, this is a two crew aircraft, was the prince and his bodyguard.
Right.
And for the first week, the princes were the pilots and the bodyguards were in the back seat, running the radar and weapons array and so on.
Right.
After the first week, they all changed places because the back seat is just much more fun.
Oh, really? Okay.
But again,
it doesn't. You wouldn't get that from Top Gun.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is... It is actually more or less plausible that it is perhaps a bit more extreme than the sort of playing tag that they would have done, but that sort of thing did happen.
Okay. And well, I gather it is
quite...
Occasionally
it did actually lead to collisions and deaths.
Well, I get, again, reading around this and desperately wanting to be annoyed with it and find it was all... inaccurate. Apparently the aviation stuff is quite accurate. You may know more than me.
There are bits that are and bits that aren't.
So. Okay.
But yeah, going back to your actual question, I didn't feel it gave me a good idea of anything beyond the immediate visual. And
I agree. I think, flipping forward a little bit, I did find Top Gun Maverick did do that. And so this is why I feel Top Gun didn't. But maybe I'm wrong.
And we do get a lot of air-to-air in this.
it's just all planes flying past the camera. Oh, there's another plane. Oh, I should look over this shoulder this time in this cut.
No, I am in the target market here. I was, 17 when this came out? But perhaps more to the point, I was already a contemporary wargamer.
Right, yes.
I knew what the planes were for. I knew what they did, what their advantages and disadvantages were against each other, and at least I feel I was able to say at any given point what was going on.
Well, so I get yeah, half the film for you.
I didn't feel it was giving me a good impression of that because, there is the classic thing. All right, I will finally admit we can move past the opening scenes and get to Top Gun.
Thank you. Oh, it's like,
as you say, we have interchangeable background pilots.
I mean, we have Goose, who is the, I mean, I suppose his dimension is he's the comedy character in a way, in that he's a little nerd, geeky and goofy and funny, I suppose. And
he's,
we have
the
Iceman.
Of the pair.
You can tell Iceman's a dick because he follows the rules. And he, you know, the rules that have been laid down by people who generally understand how these planes work and what they're trying to do and what the rules of engagement are.
We'd rather end the day with as many aircraft and pilots as they started.
And what a fucking moron Iceman is for following all that and trying not to cause an international incident and killing everyone that he goes up with. What
played,
a dick he is.
Played, of course, by young Val Kilmer, and this was his star-making role. He had already done Swap Secret and Real Genius.
Both of which are much, much better.
Yes. But it was after this that he started getting lead roles in actual big films.
I mean, I didn't want to, we've talked about Tom Cruise films before. I don't have a visceral dislike of Tom Cruise. I know some people do. Actually quite like him. Yeah, there we go. Roger does. I actually quite like him on screen. I think he can be a phenomenal actor. None of that applies here because he does no acting. He's being super confident. Sorry, my partner's laughing in the background at how much I hated this one. Tom Cruise I like least, which is the hyper-efficient Tom Cruise, the kind of Tom Cruise that runs with his hands like, you know, slicey things instead of fists like normal people run, so he can run through the air faster. It's that kind of Tom Cruise, and I don't like him in that role.
Well, there is the character who, I mean, is basically young, cocky, toxic masculinity character. And it's a character that even when I first saw this film, I had already met in real life and didn't like. You know, it's the, I don't care what you think of me, because I'm the best, and that means I don't have to play by the rules. Dad.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I have met people like that. It is a thing that programmers fall into, particularly programmers who are a bit better than the average.
Right.
Who just say, oh yeah, I don't care. I will catcall all the female staff because I'm just that good. The company can't fire me. And the
actually,
you're not that good.
Well, that's being slightly better than it. We wasn't even the best on his own frigging battleship, so I think he's the best in the country.
Carrier,
I don't
sir.
Sorry. Aircraft carrier. Sorry. I mean, this is a guy this is a guy whose idea of romance is following a woman into the ladies' toilet, and telling her he's going to fuck her on the. Oh my god, I hate this film so much. That he's going to romance her by screwing her on the next to the sink. I know it was the 1980s. I know we've all changed a bit since then. But
yeah, countertops are softer then.
Kelly McGillis. Fine actress. She has no chemistry whatsoever with Tom Cruise in this film at all.
Well, the time that there were these constant rumours that Tom Cruise was gay. Now, as far as I know, he's not. But no chemistry with the female lead is a recurring problem in his films, I think.
I can see why the rumours start that he's gay. I mean, it doesn't matter to me whether he is or isn't. If he says he isn't, then, you know, he's fine not to. But the fact remains he has no chemistry with Kelly McGillis. And
just enforces the idea that the character sees her as the prize to be won rather than anything else.
Yes, he somehow, I mean, it's not really glossing over the, there's no spoilers in this film at all, because there's no plot. Oh, Goose dies, by the way. And fuck you if that's a spoiler, because just don't watch the film. Oh my god, I hate this film. I've distracted myself with bile and hatred. The scenes with him lovemaking with Kelly McGillis are shot in exactly the same way as the plane at the start with them moving the planes over. It's all got the same sepia tone. It's got almost the same background. I mean, in that case, it's Take My Breath Away instead of Danger Zone. I like cheesy 80s pop ballads. I love them. But oh my God, this film is a 2 hour long music video shot in the same way, no matter what emotional scene anyone is having. Watching
Top
Gun.
Did you see that video John linked a few days ago about the history of Take My Breath Away?
I haven't watched it yet.
Right, because one thing from that is that originally the lovemaking scene was going to be much shorter, but it was clear that Take My Breath Away was a potential hit, and so they refilmed it so that they could play the whole song.
Oh. I mean, watching Top Gun felt to me like watching a 2 hour long trailer for a film that I didn't want to watch. That is the experience of it for me.
I would just say this film is ego is writing checks its body can't cash.
I mean, I was talking with
got James Tolkien here as the cag on the carrier, the bloke who's in charge of the aviation.
Yeah.
This is the same guy who plays Strickland in Back to the Future. He's playing the same role.
And then, of course, you have Michael Ironside, who's being Michael Ironside. I mean, they're all just so, earnest and, it's so, the testosterone just seeps off the screen and they all desperately, like Iceman and Maverick. I don't want it, I'm not a big believer
when Iceman is visiting Maverick's room in the middle of the night.
I mean, I'm not a huge believer in undertones and things, but I've certainly no problems, with people's sexuality. But oh my God, this is a very, very gay film. They are so in the closet. They are desperate to.
All those smouldering looks.
The basketball scene, whether he has chemistry.
Scene, I wrote down. Are we sure Tony Scott, director, wasn't gay? He was married 3 times, all of them 2 women.
This whole film, in so much that there's a story at all, it is a love story between Maverick and Iceman.
Yeah.
You know, they start off not liking each other. They end up embracing each other at the end. And
there is that moment when Charlie, Kelly McGillis, says that she has fallen for Maverick. And he looks confused, like the dog that caught the car. What do I do now?
Oh my goodness! I was trying to. We were talking, funnily enough, because my partner and I were talking about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and sort of comparing it with Top Gun in the sense that Maverick is sort of a similar character to Ferris in that, you know, he's. Everyone loves him and he's charismatic and he's good at everything he does. He's a Mary Sue character. And what I realised talking it through is Top Gun is a film where everyone is Ferris Bueller. All the characters are these hyper-human characters that don't have much. The point of Ferris Bueller is that actually it's the story of the characters that are left in Ferris's wake that, you know, they have to react to him and, you know, this and how it makes them feel and, you know, his sister, his friend, that doesn't happen in Top Gun because they're all Ferris. And so none of them have to react to this hyper-human character because they all are. It's, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, I feel that I should just point out because we've got the framing of this whole, what I suppose you could call it basically the middle chunk of the film, which is the Top Gun bit. And then at the end, we'll be back into real action.
Were there different bits of the film? I didn't miss passing by. There's the bit where they're on the plane.
But we are introduced to this whole training sequence as...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We are you are all competing for the Top Gun trophy. You're going to find out which of you is the best. There is no Top Gun trophy. There has never been a Top Gun trophy.
Right.
It is about... You get to the advanced pilot training. You're already pretty good as a pilot. What they're training you is tactics and cooperation.
Mm. So the very point
does not
of
signify in this film.
So the whole point of saying you're the best out of all these people is not a great cooperative teaching technique.
I mean, specifically, we'll come back to that with the fatal hop. But so, okay, I'm sorry to drag us back to the aviation part of this.
No, please do.
But it was the part that helped keep me awake. So.
The bit that I just found the plane a bit boring, not actively offensive and annoying. Like I found all the human bits. So let's return.
We do have one problem, which is they only actually got two live missile shots from the Navy.
Okay.
They got a lot of shots of planes, but they only got the two missile firings. They filmed them from multiple angles.
I was going to say, presumably they use them a lot.
But yeah, they use them repeatedly, and sometimes the same shots repeated. But okay, so two things in that first bit of it. They've got this idea that you've got a 10,000-foot virtual ground and you cannot go below that.
Yes.
And they're very clearly flying lower than that all the time. The highest mountains in that area are 6,600 feet high. They are flying between the mountains.
Well, they do specifically go below that seat, but only in one specific bit.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time. Okay, all right, yeah.
But also, okay, and this is going to spread out into military fiction in general, but this is a particularly egregious example of it. There is the manoeuvre that Maverick does. Hit the brakes or fly right past, and somebody's on your tail.
Yeah.
You shed a load of speed and let him go past you because he can't brake as fast as you can to get behind him.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, yeah.
This is a thing that does not work.
Okay.
So the basic approach for the fighter pilot is energy management. Energy can be expressed as either speed or altitude because you can turn one into the other very quickly. You know, you're going very fast, low speed, you pitch the nose up, you gain height and you slow down.
Right, okay,
or
yes.
You're going very high, you dive, you gain speed. So,
well, it's quite similar to orbital mechanics.
Only not, but yeah. So, so the basic idea is that. So they don't actually think in terms of speed management, they think in terms of energy management, but...
Yeah, okay, yeah.
What we're doing here is giving up a whole load of energy.
That makes sense, yes.
And
presumably energy is your limiting factor because that's your fuel.
Well, what you do to get it back is you dive, you still have energy if you're at high altitude, but they're not at high altitude, they're near the deck when this is happening, so they can't dive. The way you get it back is to run the engines at high power, and yes, that gets rid of your fuel, but that is a lot slower than being at a high altitude.
Than just dropping, yeah, okay, yeah.
So what would actually happen if he did that whole sudden hard pitch up and shed a whole load of speed without gaining significant altitude is the other guy is literally flying rings round you. He can just keep going, turn in. You are still stuck exactly where you are, unable to manoeuvre, unable to turn until you get some speed back up. And then you are dead.
Right, yeah, okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay.
So that was the thing. Even 17-year-old me knew this.
Okay.
Probably I was the only person in the cinema who did, but the thing is more generally...
well explained, actually.
This is a thing I meet in a lot of military fiction, when they want to say, you know, this guy's a great pilot or a great admiral or whatever. And so, yeah, they need to show him winning battles. But almost always they show him winning battles by tricks. You know, I will hide another force over here and they will come in on the enemy's rear at the crucial moment or something like that. And tricks very rarely actually work. And if they do, everybody finds out about them and then they don't work anymore.
Yeah, you have to come up with a different trick next time. The vast
majority of being a good general is just doing the thing and doing it, having more persistence to it than the other guy.
Okay.
And, you know, inspiring your troops to the point that they will accept that some of them will die because it's worth it to get the overall objective and not to disappoint you.
There have been historical generals who use tricks a lot. I'm thinking of John Sheridan in Babylon 5. That always works for him.
But that's the thing. And I can see why it happens. It's easier to relate to... Oh, I'm up against this overwhelming force, but I have come up with a cunning idea.
Yeah, it's the
coyote in Native American mythology, Loki, the trickster.
Well, it's the reason Maverick is, you know, the hero instead of Iceman. Maverick follows the rule. Maverick eschews the rules and does whatever he likes. Iceman follows the rules and consequently is a dickhead, and everyone hates it.
And the last thing I want to say about this bit, I promise we can go on eventually. is the whole thing. I'm going to buzz the tower. No, you can't. I'm going to do it anyway. I have heard an actual naval aviator when I was going to Gen Cons in the US say, yeah, if he actually did that, he would be out of the Navy before he landed.
Mm.
If he did not land pretty damn fast, he would be helped.
yeah. Well, that I think what one of the things I found, and I know to some extent it's true to life, but not entirely. They treat these things and everyone involved and all their sports staff like they're toys and they're their own personal toys. Mm-hmm. And I get that that's what men are like. Is that what naval aviators are like, or do they have that drummed out of them?
When they're new.
Yeah.
Okay. And to be fair, I think the Air Force suffers a bit more from this, but similarly, it is a very technical job. Even if you're in a single crew aircraft even if you're in a dual crew aircraft, you're only the pilot. It's still a very technical job. You have a lot of sensors to look at, even with your backseater telling you what's happening. There's a whole lot of stuff that you just have to pick up from your own instruments. We barely see the instruments here. There is a whole lot of thinking. Who is where and how could I do this? While your head is swiveling to track the one guy that your pathetic mammalian optical system is capable of tracking.
Yes.
Well, we need more comedians in the cockpit, obviously. Pilots, especially fighter pilots, can suffer from nearly as much ego as surgeons.
God, that's a horrifying prospect.
The ones who live through it get it trained out of them. And a big part of this sort of training is specifically to train it out of them.
Which is why you don't have, at the end of this, we're going to tell you which one of all of you is the best one. Okay. All right.
Before that, we need to learn that Maverick's father, brackets missing in action, was a time traveller.
Oh, this is such a tacked-on subplot that no one in the film even seems to give a shit about, let alone me, that his dad disappeared and he's grumpy about it. And oh, my God.
Yeah, and this gets mentioned as part of the post-coital chat, I think.
Yes.
Or maybe it's pre a different coital. I've lost track. But, yeah, it is explicitly said that he disappeared in 1965.
Okay, when did the Vietnam War start? 1965?
No, that works. One of the family's favourite songs before he disappeared was Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, which was not published until 1967.
Okay, well, maybe that came out in the seances. Oh, we have a returning Ribbon of Memes alumnus in Tom Skerritt as the older... I've forgotten what his call sign was, and he's... They're just also
the old pilot who reckons maybe Maverick can make a good pilot even in spite of all that.
Oh, just they're all the same character. I can't bear it. But okay, then Goose, who I knew was going to die. Okay, the big thing in the film that Goose dies, I knew he was going to die, and they knew how he was going to die. So basically, I was just waiting for it the whole film. Spoiler: Goose dies. They cock up a training exercise.
Yeah, and this is where I think that whole thing about the competition versus what actually happens is really important, because at least Maverick's perception is that Iceman is getting it in front of him and using up the limited time they have to take a shot on their target.
Mm.
So that even if Iceman doesn't get the kill, Maverick won't get the chance to either.
Yes, rather than thinking, what are we going to do to complete this objective? And I accept, actually, the film comes in more on the side of Iceman is actually doing the right thing here. But it feels like it's grudgingly doing that.
And so basically he's getting in too close. The engines on his aircraft ingest the turbulent and oxygen-depleted exhaust gases of the one in front, which is a thing that can happen if you're really fucking stupid.
yes.
And flame out. And for some reason, the auto restart doesn't work. For some reason, the manual restart doesn't work. They go into a flat spin, which is a thing you can absolutely recover from. The first thing you are taught in pilot... Well, okay, maybe about the third thing you are taught in pilot training is how to recover from flat spin.
Take off, land, flat spin.
Okay, it used to be regarded as absolutely terrifying. And, you know, it was called the death spiral. That was why it was called that.
Yeah.
Everybody knew you couldn't possibly get out of it until somebody worked out how.
And then everyone was taught how to get out of it.
And this is prior to the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's impossible to screw up in this way. And I understand that the actual death of Goose is based on a real incident, because one of the problems of the F-14 specifically was that the canopy would not separate quickly enough if you were in a flat spin. Basically, there are two steps to ejecting.
Blow the canopy.
You blow the canopy at least loose, and then in theory the airflow rips it clean of the aircraft.
But in a flat spin, it's actually being pushed down.
In a flat spin, the airflow is basically going upwards past the cockpit.
Yeah, yeah.
So what they would normally do, given the chance, is separate the canopy, physically push it away.
Yes.
And then fire the ejection seats. But, you know, there have been genuine accidents in which this didn't happen. There have also been genuine accidents in which they couldn't eject because they couldn't reach the upper handles, even though there is a lower handle specifically for this purpose, because they lost their presence of mind and failed to remember
it was
there. And
then they trained, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So I'm not saying that this is an implausible accident, but it is really an accident that does not make either of them look good.
Okay, so this is exactly what happens. The canopy doesn't clear. Maverick makes it out fine, but Goose bonks his head on the canopy and breaks his neck. And
they land in the sea.
The sea
is noticeably the other side of the city of San Diego from the training range.
Yeah, I wondered where the sea came from. But it did give us a very moving image of Maverick being really unhappy because Goose was dead and he could have him on his legs and look sad.
Yeah, I'm reminded of another anecdote from that US Navy aviator I met at Gen Con. Because getting winched up into a helicopter from the sea is one of the things they get trained for. Mm. On the basis that if this does happen, you don't want to be doing it for the first time when you're in a state of panic. And so he did this, and the whole thing happened. And on the way back, he was chatting to the crew and saying, "There's that big housing underneath that's weeping red fluid. Is that okay?" "Oh yeah, that's absolutely fine. It's when it stops weeping red fluid that we worry, because that means it's empty."
Okay. Well, see, that's more entertaining anecdote than anything that happens in Top Gun. Anyway,
Maverick is sad. He has
Maverick is now a sad pilot. So he's got a character trait now. He's sad. Goose has got one because he's dead. None of the others have got any others. Maverick's
Uncle Tom
got something.
Tells him that it's okay. His dad was really great. He didn't screw up after all, which is what all the reports said.
Yes, yeah. So that makes Maverick slightly happier.
So, you know, that's much better.
And the tribunal or whatever it is clears Maverick of any wrongdoing, even though it sounds like they probably shouldn't have done from what you say.
Frankly, everybody is so impressed because he's just so gosh darn lovable that they bend over backwards to yeah.
And then he gets less sad.
He goes to the other side of the swimming pool from where the big graduation ceremony is being held and looks on sadly.
Yeah. Oh, we forgot to say we have Meg Ryan. I mean, I can't really say anything about Meg Ryan because she doesn't really have anything to do other than look pretty. There's genuine chemistry between... I can't think of him as anything other than Dr. Green. I keep forgetting his actual name, but
Anthony Edwards.
Oh god, I love Dr. Green. I'm glad I'd never seen Top Gun before I watched DR, because I couldn't have borne Dr. Green. Anyway, there is genuine chemistry between Anthony Edwards and Meg Ryan, I feel, you know, when they're doing the piano sequence.
And the two female characters in this film do actually talk to each other, though it is about a man.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to trouble the Bechdel test anytime soon, this film. That's a nice scene. It's like, you know when you're watching a music video and there's a bit that feels slightly nice? that's how that bit felt, so that was good. Okay, we have sad Maverick, but he's resolved the troublesome subplot that has been bothering him because he can't get on with the film. Because he's all right now. His dad was wasn't a bad pilot. He was just a, you know, a terrible human. But he wasn't a bad pilot, so that's
good.
Bad
at reading maps.
Yeah, bad at reading maps. And then they all graduate. And then there's a what you would call a conveniently timed emergency. Maverick isn't number one. Iceman's number one. What a shot. But that's only because Maverick let him win, because he's sad Maverick. Anyway, there's a conveniently timed emergency with some
Basically, we're rerunning the original scene, but tensions yes. are higher.
Yes, so I mean, in this scene, you know, the real surprising thing is that Maverick gets the blinks for a bit. He starts blinking, but then Obi-Wan Goose kind of crops up and tells him to switch off his targeting computer or whatever, and he feels fine again. You can tell they're in a dogfight because they say everything twice. I checked. Every time anyone says it, it's like, break left, break left! And so they have to say this it's second time more urgently. So if I'm ever in a dogfight, I now know, say the first thing sort of calmly and then say it much more urgently the second time, then everyone will know you're in a dogfight.
So there are some operational concerns here. The initial patrol set up to intercept the latest bogey is two aircraft. Fair enough. Maverick is all on his own on the catapult to be the emergency backup. You don't do that. You never operate aircraft singly.
Yes. What's it? Yes.
So there should be two of them.
Yes.
If tensions are high enough, you might actually have four of them staged because you have four catapults.
Right.
But if you do that, you can't operate landings at the same time, so you generally don't do that. But it would absolutely be two, and then probably two more ready to go after that. But obviously the catapult breaks down at a convenient moment.
Yes, obviously.
There is that line. On your left, 3 o'clock.
I hadn't even noticed that. That's a lovely one. Okay.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's actually 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know.
And Maverick gets to shoot down a bad guy and then another bad guy and another bad guy because he's run out of missiles. He has to use guns as well.
Three. I mean, that's quite impressive, isn't it?
I can't actually remember how many he shot down.
He does get three. It wasn't enough to be an ace. I remember thinking that during the film. Is that, I mean, would that not be an international incident? Or does that not matter? Yeah, okay. I was going to say, no one seems worried that they might have actually fired the opening shots of World War III.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, everything at this point depends on how the unnamed foreign power chooses to react.
We'll come back to this more when we talk about Maverick, because to be honest, at this point, I was just glad the film was over.
The bad guys did fire first.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, presumably there's a lot of diplomacy goes on. The film is not interested in any of that. It just wants Iceman and Maverick's love story to be concluded. They do. They hug. They don't kiss, unfortunately, but they do hug in a manly way. And that's nice.
So an aircraft with engine failure an aircraft on which one engine has failed is very often an aircraft on which the second engine is going to fail. So the absolute priority of everybody is to get that thing on deck as soon as possible.
Okay.
Not to buzz the tower. One last time.
Oh, with Kenny Loggins. I like Danger Zone, but goodness me, that gets a lot of airtime in this film. I don't... Aside from... what's the sad, punchy film? Raging Bull. But at least that's supposed to be miserable.
Yeah.
At least that's supposed to be miserable. I mean, it was a very well done character study. It was just a character I wanted nothing to do with. I didn't want to spend any time with him. I don't know if I've got across that I didn't like the film, but I didn't really like Top Gun.
So let indulge me for a moment as I delve into Roger's potted history of the F-14.
Okay.
Because it's an interesting aircraft. It was the emergency replacement because the Navy needed a new interceptor. Fair enough. And it was going to be the F-111, which was at that point in its history going to have a carrier variant.
Right.
It turned out to be barely supersonic, which is a bit rubbish for an interceptor, and B, really quite bad at carrier landings because you need to, more or less need to rebuild the aircraft afterwards. And carrier
That's
landings
not helpful.
Are not a easy thing for an aircraft to do.
Wouldn't you have to rebuild the carrier afterwards? I suppose that's helping.
So the B variant, which was the naval one, got cancelled, and they hastily got McDonnell Douglas to whip up the F-14. Its basic job, and remember that this is happening conceptually in the 50s and 60s, when they are still under the belief, as I mentioned right at the start, that the dogfight is going to be obsolete, the crewed aircraft is soon going to be obsolete, because missiles are going to do everything. And the and it is not as an extreme an example of this as the F-104 Starfighter or the MiG-25, both of which are explicitly, my job here is to get the missile to vaguely the right place and turn it loose to do the actual fighting. But it is of that school of thought. The F-14 goes with the AWG-9 radar, which was only ever fitted to the F-14, and the AIM-54 Phoenix missile, which was only ever fired by the F-14.
Okay.
It has it's a really good onboard radar. It can track multiple targets. It's rubbish at looking down, but every radar in the 80s was rubbish at looking down.
Okay.
The missile actually has its own onboard radar for terminal guidance, and I'm not sure if it's the only missile that's done that, but it's vanishingly rare. It's ridiculously long range, like 100 miles plus.
Right.
So the idea is you get to a nice safe distance from the enemy aircraft, which is in the original model, which is very much Cold War, 6,000 backfire bombers coming into nuclear carrier. You track them with the onboard radar, you shoot off the very long range missile where any escorts they may have can't get back at you. You feed it mid course corrections. The thing can keep, I think, 6 missiles updated, which is conveniently how many, I think it can.
This is from
6.
Your plane, not from the carrier. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I don't think they've got as far as the data link for mid-course corrections for ground-launched or sea-launched missiles at this point. That was something that came along later as a concept.
Okay.
They would have if they could have. Mid-course updates, it gets close enough, it picks its target and homes in on it without even needing the carrier aircraft to continue to assist.
Right.
Great idea. The US fired in actual combat 3 Phoenix missiles.
Okay.
All of them against Iraqi MiGs in 1999. 2 of them, the engine didn't ignite. The other one just missed.
Okay, so that's a 0% success rate.
But that is fundamentally what the F-14 was for. It was to carry the Phoenix missile. That was what the Phoenix missile was for. It's to shoot down enemy bomber raids.
Right.
None of which we ever hear about in this film. So, the US, of course, was not the only operator of the F-14. They tried desperately to sell them to all sorts of places. Nobody wanted it because, I mean, it's basically a carrier plane.
Okay.
It has a lot of stuff that makes it good for carriers, not really terribly interesting for anything else.
And not many other countries have carriers.
Yeah, the French could have, but wouldn't have. The British didn't have a carrier capable of it, or I think they were retiring. Yeah, didn't have a carrier capable of it at this point. They tried it with Japan, who might have been persuaded to build a carrier, but Japan said no. However, the Shah of Iran said, ooh, shiny. I don't need a carrier anyway. It's a shiny aircraft with shiny missiles. I will have one of these. I will have, in fact, 80 of these.
Wow.
And then 3 years later, see previous episode Argo, if you don't know the history, there was a change of government.
Can I just say, don't watch Argo if you want to know anything about history. But...
Watch the first 3 minutes of Argo.
Right.
And so the revolutionary government had these America's shiny latest combat aircraft. You better believe they made the most of them they could. They have some really impressive claims of shoot-downs with Phoenix missiles, including 4 aircraft with a missile. It is contended that some of these claims may in fact be fibs.
How could you shoot down four aircraft with one missile? Is it like in The Last Crusade when Indy shoots four Nazis with a single Luger?
Maybe they're flying very close together.
Okay, yeah. Maybe they were on the ground next to a massive tub of airplane fuel.
It looks, from what I can see, what they actually did, well, they could still fly them, and obviously these things need a lot of maintenance. It's not clear whether any of them are still flying now, though they claim they are. But it looks as if what they mostly did was keep them well back from anywhere dangerous and use them as airborne radar platforms, which, to be fair, they're very good at. So, yeah, that's the F-14.
That's very different to how they used in Top Gun.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yes, they genuinely did train for dogfighting and the advanced piloting stuff, but a lot of it is... And yes, it's great if you can shoot the other guy down, but it's also great if you can lure him out of position so your wingman can shoot him down.
Well, that would involve cooperation, which Maverick is not capable of, at least in the first film.
So, two war games that I know about from this, there may well have been others. The two I've had anything to do with, there was a game published at the same time as the film from FASA. Who at the time were producing your BattleTech and AeroTech and stuff like that.
Oh, Ark, yep.
Designed in-house. It's a classic hex encounter or hex and miniature game. There is another aircraft game that I was playing at the time or a year later or so, which was J.D. Webster's Air Superiority, which I much prefer. But this is basically it's a game that matches the film. It's about the dogfighting and the sexy maneuvers. More than it is about
the jet fighters.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is also more recently the uncredited Top Gun strategy game, which is not trying to simulate air combat. It is more trying to simulate the feel of the film. To the extent
why would anyone wish to do such a thing?
That there are two phases to the game. First, there is the volleyball phase. And the better you do in that, the more option cards you have in the dogfight phase.
Actually, that sounds more interesting than watching the film.
So I needed a palate cleanser after this. So I watched Hot Shots.
Oh, I definitely need to watch Hot Shots again.
You haven't had time to watch it. I won't go through it in detail. But frankly, I enjoyed it a whole lot more. Not to mention they use Fallen Gnats, which are an obscure aircraft, even by my standard, as the good guys' aircraft.
So Hot Shots is Charlie Sheen in the kind of airplane version of Top Gun satire, basically.
Yeah, it is a very good parody of Top Gun specifically.
Not satire, sorry. You can't satirize Top Gun.
It does, in fact, parody something that wouldn't be part of the film until Top Gun Maverick, which we'll come on to, but never mind that.
Okay. I'm definitely going to watch it, Hot Shots.
But it's great fun. There was a number two which was okay, but...
Part deux, I believe.
Yeah. So, yeah. They borrowed footage for that from Flight of the Intruder, which was John Milius' last film.
I've
read the book that was based on and didn't particularly rate it, but anyway.
I gather it was a bit of a disaster, but maybe I'm misremembering.
But there was, I mean, at the time, this was one of the early examples, I think, of a film that was regarded as absolute rubbish by the critics, but was so successful at the box office that nobody cared.
I mean, it's Tony Scott directed, brother of Ridley Scott. I think he has since passed away.
I think so.
Tony Scott's background, I may be wrong, but I believe was in music video, and I don't think he really... I mean, I think this is a music video. There's nothing in it for me. Maybe I'm just the wrong person to be watching the film, but goodness me.
But apart from the fact that my eyes were bad enough that they wouldn't actually take me in the Air Force, this should have been absolutely the film that changed my life. And
it's
really
interesting. It's been much more interesting talking about the technicalities than it has watching the bastard film. Shall we move on to possibly the biggest gap between sequel until they do another one?
Well, I'll come back to that. But I'd just like to mention one other thing in passing, which is this had a lot of influence. it was actually blamed in part for the tailhook scandal, which was basically a whole lot of boys will be boys at a convention in Las Vegas that got so serious that the authorities had to take notice. But one of the things that was blamed for those guys thinking they could get away with it, and many of them were cashiered for conduct unbecoming an officer, was this film.
Was the cool. Also, I wonder how many people have died in motorbike accidents because they thought it looked cool to drive around in a motorbike without a helmet.
Though, to be fair, that's every American film that has a motorbike in it.
Well, it's very prominent here anyway. Okay, yeah. Yes. It was super influential, I'm sorry
to say. It
was
suggested that it was responsible for a huge uptick in people enlisting in the US Navy wanting to be aviators. That doesn't seem to be proven, but it certainly produced an effect.
It's plausible. I mean, it's all...
last thing I'm going to say, Iron Eagle. Which is...
I've never seen Iron Eagle.
Good. it is a series of films. The only common factor between them is Lou Gossett Jr.
You
needed a paycheck. I understand. I respect you still. But the first one is basically the kid who has adolescent problems and he's just been turned down for the Air Force Academy. But his father, who is a pilot, has gone missing, and so persuades Lou Gossett and wavy hands and flies a mission to rescue him. And yeah, it's got a decent soundtrack. Katrina and the Waves, Maniac House.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I like all the Top Gun soundtrack songs, but didn't do much for me. Ultimately, trying to dial back my hatred, it's just absolutely, completely vapid style over substance. There's no depth to it. At all, and I didn't care about any of the characters. They barely were characters. It's just sepia toned music video chewing gum, and I hated every minute of it.
But it made lots of money, so it was widely imitated.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. So that's my is it a masterpiece? No, it fucking wasn't, and I don't care how influential it was. It's absolutely the antithesis of film for me. It's just it's steaming turd.
When we got into Top Gun Maverick, I had detoxed with hot shots and you hadn't, and I think you may
it's
have
fair
had
to say
amount.
I went into it with low expectations. This is 34 years later. I think it was filmed pre-pandemic and then delayed till after the pandemic, so Tom Cruise probably wasn't as old as you would think. I mean, he's a few years young.
But he's in his late 50s at this point, at least.
Yes, yes. And so
just in terms of gap, the longest gap between non-animated film and non-animated sequel that I'm aware of is 54 years with Mary Poppins and Mary Poppins Returns.
Is that a direct sequel, Mary Poppins Returns?
It is asserted to be.
I felt that was more like a remake. but I haven't seen Mary Poppins.
Actual gap is Bambi and Bambi 2, but you know, animated, it's easier.
but this has some of the same cast. Principally, it has Tom Cruise back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm delighted to report Top Gun Maverick is, I would say, probably 100 times better than Top Gun. Now, that's still a pretty low bar. and I still have significant problems with it, but
having returned to a more normal state of mind, I hated it.
Good, okay, there we go. I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I liked it, but I much preferred it to Top Gun. Well, I'll tell you why I prefer it. Has a plot. There is more plot in the first 10 minutes of Top Gun Maverick than there is in the entire first Top Gun film. It's also, you know, like I like a bit of melancholy and brooding, not like sad Top Gun, oh, Goose is dead. But this whole film is shot through with a more nostalgic, but sepia tone.
Some of it is explicitly nostalgic. I mean, there are elements where they're clearly saying, you remember original Top Gun when you were young and cool. You feel like that again now.
Well, that works better for me. Again, maybe I'm in that target. I suppose I wasn't in the target audience, you know, when Top Gun came out, but I am in the kind of old guy kind of thinking back on the 80s as a You know, the Cold War was a happier time, wasn't it? When we could all be annihilated at any minute because a flock of geese flew in front of Soviet missile detectors. But it's Maverick here does... He's more self-aware. He is older and aware of that. He's more... He's kind of a lonelier figure, whereas before he was... in the bar with all his mates. This time he's an outsider. He can't join in with this young, dumb, full of cum group of people because he's too old. And I liked that kind of reflection of it. Tom Cruise, I mean, it reminds me in Lord of the Rings when they're talking about Bilbo, and they're saying he's not just aged well, he's unchanged, he's nearer the mark. But then Bilbo says he feels stretched like butter that's been spread over too much bread. And that's what Tom Cruise looks like. Either he's had extensive plastic surgery or he has owned the One Ring for the last 34 years. But he doesn't look young.
Or he has a portrait in his attic.
He looks odd. But
looking,
I mean, that's...
on the bright side, they do spell insure correctly.
They do. They correct the typo, insure. Maverick is now, he's not ambitious because all he wants to do is fly his plane. So now he's a test pilot.
Yeah. Now this is a thing. And the age is important.
I had a feeling he wouldn't be happy with the test
pilot. Because, and yes, there are people who are still doing high pressure flying at that sort of age. But they are doing it with very specific medical considerations because, you know, when you are in your 20s, your body can put up with a lot. And when you are in your late 50s, it can't. Well, and I don't care how amazingly good a pilot you are, you pull too many G's and your aorta is going to tear away from your heart.
Yes, you are less elastic. Physically, the fluid in your vestibular apparatus is more viscous and you cannot tolerate the kind of, you get dizzier much more quickly. You cannot tolerate the kind of G's you were. You are more rippable and less bendy than you were in your 20s. However much plastic surgery you've had and
however much American grit your character has.
However much American grit you have. However leading manny you are. Is going 10, Mach 10, is that? I mean, Chuck Yeager was doing that in the...
It doesn't need to be physically demanding at all. No. So, all right. So he is testing this prototype hypersonic aircraft, which is, you know, the program is about to be cancelled. He says, no, I am Maverick. I'm going to take her up for one last flight and prove that she can do what we all say she can do. Yeah, so for a start, there isn't a lot of point to a combat aircraft being able to fly at Mach 10 from a standing start. Because, I mean, okay, in the film, from takeoff to Mach 10 is 198 seconds. And possibly it might actually be supposed to take longer than that because we're not going to see every moment of it.
Yeah.
But that would be a steady 1.7G of acceleration into your seat.
Okay.
And it would take 200 miles in a straight line.
Yeah.
And if you think, well, he could turn back and forth, a 100-mile radius turn at Mach 10 is 6G.
I was going to say, any movement you do other than fly forward very quickly is going to kill you, presumably.
Well, you need to be at least really quite careful about it. Now, there are some military use cases for it, which is basically part of the whole American, everybody's pissed off at us, we can't have bases anymore, therefore we need an aircraft that can fly halfway around the world and blow somebody up for America and fly back again. Yeah.
Well, also, so he's trying to save all these people's jobs because he's Maverick and he's a good guy. But he fucking wrecks the plane completely.
Because he's still Maverick and he doesn't just do the Mach 10 and come home. He does the, let's see how fast this thing can go.
Yeah, yep. They've all lost their jobs anyway. So well done, Maverick, because presumably they're not going to get funded to rebuild the thing. Then we have Ed Harris turn up being very Ed Harris.
Yeah, we got Ed Harris. We got Charles Parnell. We got John Hamm.
John, yeah, they're all, I mean, they all do exactly what they're supposed to do on the tin from which their character was removed from the Hollywood trope of characters. We do have Jennifer Connelly, who she is a living embodiment of why aging naturally looks better than plastic surgery. I presume she may well have had some surgery, but she also has allowed herself to look older. Consequently, she's gorgeous, and Tom Cruise looks like a weird Gollum creature for some reason.
Which, I mean, a lot of female actors do as well, but fortunately she hasn't.
I mean, not that it's about look, I'm not that intro, but it strikes me when you're rich, Hollywood person, you've got a choice of either looking older or looking weirder, but you're never going to look young. So, you know.
Yeah. Just, also, I suspect if you are an actor and you're mostly hanging around actors and other film people, they may be more used to the weirdness of plastic surgery and say, hey, you look great, rather than a normal person who will say, what the hell?
Anyway, that aside, you know, Tom Cruise is in good shape, but he is clearly, you know, it is quite a jar from 34 years ago.
It's time for the contrived situation.
I mean, this, we're talking about contrived situation an episode or so ago with Dog Soldiers. I mean, this, the degree of contrivance here to get the character's skills be actually useful in a modern day fighter jet feels to even to me, who is not very good at AVA. Am I right in thinking this is a really contrived situation to get them to do the thing? Yeah.
Okay. So the idea is that there is this enemy nuclear facility, which is going to be doing all sorts of bad things. And it's going to be
never explicitly mentioned. Presumably it's Iran, if we're supposed to think of anything at all.
I'll come back to why we know it's Iran later.
Okay.
There's been a hint already. But it's at the bottom of a deep crater.
Oh, I know. Anyway,
it's at the bottom of a deep crater. And there is GPS jamming. And there are interceptors nearby as well.
So fifth generation. America's got the richest, most powerful military in the world.
Yeah,
but they're outgunned by this little...
Well, fifth generation is a slightly fuzzy term. Because everybody wants to say their latest thing is fifth generation, because that's obviously the new sexy thing.
Right.
There is officially no sixth generation fighter in service, and I strongly suspect there will not be until the new American thing, which has just been authorised, is in service, and then it will suddenly be called a sixth generation fighter. And maybe some other aircraft will be too. But the basic problem is America's fifth generation fighters, using the loose definition, are basically the F-22 and the F-35. The F-22 is actually quite good. The F-35 is a bit rubbish. We see some F-35s in the reminiscent opening scene on the carrier deck.
Yeah. I did actually, to touch on that future, I found this, the opening scene in Maverick, more interesting. It actually got slightly more of the technical details, the way things clunk together, but the guy down in there, I found it slightly more interesting from a technical perspective.
The main impression I got was that this was trying very hard to be a nostalgia fest.
Yeah. I have a large nostalgia button, so it did work better.
Yes, but it's trying to make you nostalgic for Top Gun.
I know, and it worked. That is incredible, because I've rarely seen a film I hated more than Top Gun. And somehow this film still made me think, valuable I am.
We've got this whole idea that they can't use guided missiles because of the GPS jamming.
Yes.
A hint, most guided missiles are actually, well, particularly the Tomahawk, are built on the assumption that GPS may not be 100% reliable, what with the whole war situation.
Yeah, right, yes.
And what it will run on in its latest iterations is a combination of inertial mapping, which you basically can't screw up, and a large terrain map ROM, which it compares with its forward-looking sensors. So basically it can say, I'm expecting there to be a valley there, therefore I will start to pitch down so that I can remain at 20 feet above ground level.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I'm not saying that it would absolutely get through the interceptors, though they're quite hard to shoot down when they're flying very low, but you could send an awful lot of them.
Yeah, yes.
And what it could do is continue flying at 20 feet above ground level all the way up the side of the... volcanic crater, is it, maybe? I don't know.
It looks like some kind of asteroid, but it's an awful... I mean, presumably...
And then all the way down and then hit precisely on where the target is.
The problem with that, Roger, is then you would have a lot of pilots go to the mouth of the, well, presumably 100 miles away from the mouth of the thing, and shoot their missiles and come home, and not have to pull a 10G pull-up to get out of the crater.
Yeah. So because Tom is very important, and we can't disappoint Tom, they have to do this with actual manned aircraft.
Yes.
And because the budget won't run to F-35 models, they have to do this with F-18s.
I think is an F-35 two-seater?
I'm not sure of.
So I don't think it was the budget so much as they needed someone in the front seat to actually be flying the plane.
I thought the C variants were, but I may be wrong. Yeah, fair enough.
I gather that's why they used different planes, because they needed a two-seater plane. Even if it looked like a one-seater, because they need someone to be actually flying.
Well, the F-35EF, which is the model they're using, otherwise known as the Super Hornet, is actually a reasonably capable combat aircraft for a 1980s design. The original, the first four models were quite good aircraft, but had the range to invade Canada and nowhere else.
But aren't they explicitly talking about having F-18s?
Yes, what they don't say is they're talking the modern F-18,
okay.
Where they managed to improve the range so that it's not completely rubbish.
So is it right that they would have zero chance against whatever planes, country can throw at them?
There's a lot of talk about the superior fighter can easily take out the inferior fighter.
Yeah.
In war games, F-35 against F-18, until the scenario is thoroughly stacked, the F-18s tend to win, which is very embarrassing for everybody. So they don't like to talk about that.
Okay, so that's not entirely accurate then, presumably. There's a lot of talk
A lot of it is pilot competence. A lot of it is numbers. A lot of it is, you know, just how good are the enemy radar operators and how many missiles do they have to fire from the ground?
Well, there's a lot of talk about it's not the plane, it's the pilot, but I don't see many Fokker Wolfs up there.
It's a consideration, at least. Basically, the more advanced the aircraft get, the less the actual margin between that and the previous model. And the more expensive it is, so the more you have to talk it up so they will buy it rather than the previous model.
Okay, so we have a nostalgic Tom Cruise, nostalgic Maverick, can't fly them himself. He meets John Hamm, who is an angry John Hamm, but he still has Iceman protecting him. Iceman in this...
looks as old as he is.
Well, Val Kilmer, again, I think he had throat cancer at this point, or laryngeal cancer. Val Kilmer, who's just recently passed away. Mm-hmm. I found it quite moving, in a way that I did not care in Top Gun. I did find, so they meet up, and it, you know, again, they work Val Kilmer's actual illness into the
plot. Quite explicit that the only reason Tom is still getting to fly is that Val has been covering for him all these years.
Yeah, and I like it's a more human story because they're actual fucking human beings, unlike Top Gun. You know, we have the nice banter between them, and they give him a hug. It made me think, oh, it's a nice friendship in a way that I gave no shits about it in Top Gun. So somehow Maverick made me care slightly more about Top Gun.
What he actually turns up to do is to say, hey, You get to pull my arse out of the fire one last time.
yes. But it's a nice... And then Iceman dies, and then he's left with John Hamm, and he has to convince John Hamm by being just so, so good. So he meets... But I like the scene. So he rekindles an old flame, we imagine, with Jennifer Connelly. And again, there's much more...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about much more, but there is some chemistry between...
Given as a passing reference in the original form, you know, three low passes over whatever it was, three carriers and one admiral's daughter or something like that.
She is
admiral's daughter.
She's named Chet, yes.
She has had a life. She has a kid. She has been married.
And
hasn't been just waiting for Magic Tom to come along.
Yes, exactly. And she's reluctant to
you know, she is running a bar in her own right.
Yes, she's got a bit of a Karen Allen vibe going on. And we meet the young pilots here. I mean, we have some different representation instead of
Some who aren't white.
Yes, we have some who aren't white and some who aren't male.
One.
Yeah, okay, well.
You know, they're not the same person.
They're not the same person. I
guess to an American, Hispanic counts as non-white.
Well, and we have the asshole Hangman.
Who is basically this film's Iceman, yep.
Yes, exactly. Only more so, I suppose, because he's more of an actual dick. But again, he plays by the rules. The plot that didn't work desperately well for me is Goose's son. It just felt all a bit contrived. Why they
you
didn't
killed
like
Dad.
Each other?
Well, yes, you did. And then you blocked me getting into the Naval Academy because you didn't want me to die the way Dad did, even though you weren't flying yourself at the time.
That felt very contrived. In a similar way to the whole mission is contrived to allow the pilots to do their thing. This whole dislike, you know from the beginning that either, at spoilers, he doesn't, either Maverick will die, but they'll die when they're reconciled, and so Goose's son will be happier. What's he called? Chicken? I can't remember. Rooster.
Rooster, yeah.
Or they'll end up reconciled. So it's not a subplot that has really any, but at least it has some emotional resonance. It's dealt with a bit slightly more deftly than Maverick's dad in the original Top Gun.
But well, they are basically saying, here are these pilots who are the significant ones. It's mostly Rooster, but it's a little bit the others.
Yeah.
And here, yeah, okay, it's Rooster and not Iceman.
Yeah, the other one, Hangman.
And the other ones who, coincidentally, the other ones are more sort of in the background.
It's the funny one, Bob. Yeah. Slightly funny, yeah.
I kept waiting for him to actually get a thing to justify his having been funny but serious.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Yeah, they are going up against an assortment of fighter aircraft, including a Sukhoi 57, which was originally known as the PAC FA as a reporting name. It's a 1980s design that got interrupted by the collapse of the Soviet Union, and then they restarted in the 2000s. Broadly, it's a copy of the early ideas for the F-22, and it's about as capable as that.
Right.
It is not a sixth generation fighter, even slightly.
Okay, so I don't know why they're all so scared of it.
Well, basically, the Soviets have not had a effectively 20-year production break because of the collapse of the Soviet Union before Russia started seriously militarizing again.
Yes.
America had this is the problem with both of its fighters. They are late 90s designs, which were supposed to be in service in the early 2000s and weren't. Because production.
Right.
And a certain amount of profiteering. Meanwhile, China had its late 90s designs and put them into service. And then it had its late 2000s designs and put them into service. And it's working on getting its late 2010s designs into service now.
You don't hear a lot about that, Roger. Funny enough.
That's why I don't put a lot of credence in the whole X generation fighter thing. People say that if it has specific technologies, it can be of this generation. But yeah, there's not a huge margin.
Nobody wants to admit the Chinese are outgunning the Americans.
But anyway, what they also have is a significant F-14, which is how we know it's Iran.
Yes, okay, I remembered.
Nobody else ever had them.
You put your Chekhov's F-14 in it earlier. Yes. Okay. Well, so they do the training for the mission.
Beach football scene, which is supposedly encouraging teamwork.
Yeah. I mean, it's less homoerotic, than the original Top Gun scene and a bit more camaraderie. Like, it's just on the whole, it's just more deftly written than Top Gun. I mean, it has some plot. It's not just a music video. There is some story, and it does hit some narrative beats. I'm not saying it's a high bar.
Very synthetic to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree.
To make this mission work, we have to fly up this gully so that the radar won't track us. And we have to do it in a certain minimum time because they will be alerting the airbase. And if we cross the threshold of the airbase after they've been alerted, yeah, they shoot us down before we even get to drop the bombs.
So that's, you know, that's the extra party tension. But we've also got some.
Can you get it down to the 50 seconds or whatever? And they say, no, this is impossible. We can't do it. Well, Maverick's just going to casually do it in 30 seconds because that's just how good he is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's much more by the numbers plot. I mean, you've got this external tension, you've got the mission suit, we've got this internal tension. Ooh, Maverick and Chicken Man don't like each other, or do they, or whatever. So it's, I don't know, it fits more comfortably into a more normal narrative, which maybe is why. But it's I don't know, it's just written better, and it's acted. Tom Cruise as, I don't know, I prefer him when he's less hyper-competent Tom. And he's, you know, slightly sad Tom.
He's Tom the God of Aviation here.
Yeah, I know. But he's doubting himself a bit because he's it works a little. Okay, so anyway, long story short, they do the mission, but it goes a bit tits up.
They do the mission. A bunch of them get shot down.
Well, two of them get specifically in that Maverick bails out and then Chickeny goes back to get him, and then he gets shot down as well. I don't know what he was going to do. Like, also, okay, they shoot Maverick down, so they've got an enemy combatant on the ground. Why are they then strafing in him with machine gun fire instead of going to pick him up?
Well, he is still an enemy combatant. He is a legitimate military target.
I know, but you wouldn't, though, would you? You'd go and capture him. You wouldn't kill him, presumably.
Usually. I mean, you, particularly if this is Iran, you can get a much more publicity out of here is this pilot sent on an illegal mission to
he's
destroy our civilian nuclear power plant.
Way more to you alive at that point. You would just, I mean, he's a pilot. He might have a sidearm, that's it. But anyway, that's fine. They manage to land close enough that they can meet up within a few minutes. By land, I mean eject, because they both lose their planes. And then they sneak onto the aircraft, find an unguarded F-14, load it up and take off.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that could happen? I don't. Why is no one there looking after the F-14? Why is there a fuel tank next to it? Why doesn't someone in the air traffic control cut off that fuel tank? Why does no one notice?
Well, no,
they're
to be fair,
off?
You probably don't have a central control. What you would have, and it's if you've ever been to an air show, you may see that when there are hangars, they generally have a guard.
Yes.
Standing around saying, no, you can't come in here, sir. What is that uniform? Where's your pass?
Particularly when the base has just been strafed and is on high alert, I would have thought. But
one,
maybe
one
that's
feels
just
that
me.
That would be a consideration,
You would have thought there's levels of security that may increase when you've just been attacked by enemy combatants. But
we also have this quite contrived. I mean, these are you've just said it's F-18 because it's two-seat aircraft, but they're not operating them as two-seat aircraft, are they? I mean,
no,
because we need to get Tom ejected and on the ground and Rooster ejected and on the ground. And nobody else derail their uncle-son bonding moment.
I don't know if they're supposed to be two-seat aircraft in the play. I just know that they were when they were filming because they had to have someone flying while they were filming. I did, again, as an aside, as I mentioned during time, I did find I got a better sense of it. Maybe because there's some landmarks and because they've gone through the whole mission beforehand, so we know the geography. I got a better sense of what was happening with the planes in Top Gun Maverick.
There is the valley with the missiles. There is the openish ground with the airfield. There is the crater.
Yes. So I understood that better, partially because it's been explained to me. Okay, so they meet up, they steal the F-14 and fly home with it. He knocks off his landing gear, but he manages to land fine without a tyre. It's probably okay. Isn't that going to bollocks up the landing zone of the aircraft carrier?
Well, an aircraft carrier landing described by experts as a controlled crash is already as tough on the aircraft as it can possibly be. I'm not saying, what you would probably get is you might well scrape it. They use the barrier net in this, which is fair enough. That's what it's for. And that is basically designed to stop an aircraft that is going full speed, full power, no brakes.
And that will stop it shooting off the edge of the...
Yeah.
Okay.
At which point, what they would probably do is cover the entire thing with fire retardant foam.
Right.
And then let the air crew get in. The medical crew get in to cut the pilot out of the cockpit.
Okay. That is basically the plot of the film. I mean, why? What one of my main issues with it is maybe that's just me being a liberal lefty, but not one of these pilots at any point, or no one in the film, ever questions or is interested in any of the context or the politics or the backstory. I know the military is supposed to be neutral, but just to me...
Well, that is particularly an American trope, that you will get people saying the military is supposed to be apolitical in the sense of you're not supposed to question your orders ever because that would be political, even as they have the, I will grant, demand, sometimes intention, of you are not allowed to obey an illegal order. You are not only allowed but required to say, no, sir, I will not obey that illegal order.
Okay.
It is not supposed to be good for your career, and it usually isn't, but you are required to do that. And if you know or even have reasonable doubt about whether the order is legal and you do it anyway, it is not going to help you when it comes time to the war crimes trial.
I see. Okay, yes. Well, then you would have thought some of them would be interested in the context. I know the film isn't interested and it just wants to... Much as in Top Gun, where they're all super happy when they potentially start World War III. There's no explanation as to why. And you would have thought, given the history of America and neocons and the damage that has done to American relations and particularly in the Middle East.
Yes, but let's face it. This film's political ethos in this regard is there is a dangerous thing out there. Thank goodness we have a strong military to blow it up before it becomes seriously dangerous to us.
Yeah, I suppose I'm asking for something that just can't happen in a film like this, but it tells me it's a big reason why I don't like a film like this. I mean, my overall feeling of Maverick is it's much more interesting than Top Gun because it is not the vapid, gaseous lump of turd that Top Gun is. It's got some plot and some characterization and some story. But it is not a plot or characters or story that I am particularly like or am interested in. And I feel that's where I am with Maverick. Much, much better than Top Gun. Still didn't like it.
Yeah. And that ending scene of... is one of those... You remember when we were talking about... Edge of Tomorrow?
That one, yes, Live, Die, Repeat, or yeah. it's got different names depending on where.
Where they clearly put this bit of motorcycling in because Tom wanted to ride the motorcycle. Well, here we get the scene at the end because Tom wants to fly the plane.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's his plane, I think, isn't it? Possibly. It might be his personal plane, the one where he flies.
Could well
it,
be, yeah. I don't know.
He's certainly flying it himself. Anyway, well done, Tom. You have enough money that you can spend some of your free time on a plane and learn to fly it. Good man. So you hated it. I'm not sure I viscerally hated this one like I hated Top Gun. What was it about this that you really
I think know? It started with the combination of old Tom, but he's still the world's best pilot, with a specific thing, the high G manoeuvres, that would explicitly be a thing that any old pilot would be unable to do, however amazing a pilot he is. And then this just never even gets mentioned.
Yes.
The thing is, there's this is something they found out, I think, with the F-16. It's not just the Gs that matter, it's how fast the Gs come on. Because the F-16 was, I don't know if it was the first, but it was one of the early high-performance fly-by-wire aircraft.
Mm.
So when you pull the stick hard back... You don't have any of these mechanical linkages. You are just turning an electric motor to put me into the steepest climb I can do.
Yes.
And so what they found out from that is even if you have someone who can take 10 Gs in the centrifuge, you give them a sudden 8 G shock and they reliably black out.
Right. Okay.
This is
also it depends where the G is applied and how, but I guess that's a lot of the design of the plane.
Well, one thing they get accurate is that they go inverted for the thing over the crater rim, because it is much easier to sustain a downward than an upward force if you're sitting.
Yeah,
works much better if you're prone or supine, and that's been tried a few times, but it's never been a big success.
Even though I liked Maverick more, it feels much less realistic in a way than the original Top Gun. More contrived might be a better way of putting it.
Yeah, and it's very much, for me, it was the point of this film is to present Maverick as a heroic guy. Therefore, we will constrain everything else in the world, the mission, the aircraft, the biomedical physics of it.
Yeah, which is all to funnel him down this path where
everything
his particular
will be made in order
set.
For him to fly the key mission and him to drop the crucial bomb.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
I would agree with you, I did not hate it as much as Top Gun, but oh boy, I hated it.
I mean, they're both kind of to me, what people mean when they're like, oh, typical bloody American Hollywood film. And I think that's generally an unfair complaint about a lot of films. I think this is the kind of film they mean when they're talking about that. And by this, I mean both of them.
Also,
they just...
most other things by Bruckheimer and or Bay.
Well, yes, yeah. I mean, they're just, it's jingoistic. It celebrates white masculinity and individualism.
I'm not even sure it's that exactly, because jingoism is saying my lot is better than your lot. This is just a casual, unthinking assumption.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Better than their lot.
You've nailed it. It never even questions that there isn't jingoism because you don't need it, because why would there be any other mode of thinking than our mode of thinking? That's very, very astute. Yeah, I think you're right. And this kind of celebration of the individual above the team, and both films kind of do that. Though Top Gun slightly redresses the balance by Iceman winning the thing. Mm. But even then, you know, he has to be rescued by Tom later. Okay. There is some suggestion they're going to make another Top Gun. I shall not be watching it.
Maybe for a bit. Maybe with a lot of alcohol involved.
Oh, dear me. It's been a long time since I disliked films as well. It's made me dislike Tom Cruise more than I do, because I don't mind. I mean, I've never been interested particularly in the Mission Impossible films, because he's just come out with another one. But it's made me less interested in watching it. Can we watch something else next time?
The pilot's handle ejects both people in the aircraft. The backseater's handle only ejects the backseater.
Okay.
So they specifically could not do the thing that they did of ejecting only the pilot.
I'm not going to hold that against the film particularly.
Specifically, where, in terms of narrative tension, which it's not doing a terrible job of, if you ignore all the actual...
I think that's why I preferred Maverick. It does actually have some effort in there.
And the thing I said at the time was, it shoots itself in the foot when it makes it clear that everybody who isn't Rooster or Maverick is okay. You know, the other pilots on this mission are safely back out of enemy airspace.
Yes.
Because Rooster
yes.
is obviously not going to die.
Yes.
And while Maverick dying, having reconciled, would be a great tragedy moment, it's Tom Cruise, so he's not going to allow it.
Exactly. I never
so,
really
so basically
thought
all the remaining tension fell out of the film at that point for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's a bit like a James Bond movie in that you kind of know they're all going to make it. I won't say any spoilers for a random James Bond film. not for me. I don't even feel to me they're masterpieces of, you know, cinematography. I've been much more impressed with many other films we've seen in the way they've filmed.
Well, I will admit that Top Gun is very good in terms of making a piece of propaganda.
Well, I was about to say, where I could see it being a masterpiece is as a piece of propaganda. Battleship Potemkin kind of...
I seriously enjoy it, and I do rewatch every so often. Both Went the Day Well and Alexander Nevsky, which
are
both explicitly made as propaganda films.
But they both have emotional depth in some, there's something to them, which the original Top Gun is entirely devoid of. I rest my case. I think I'd like to stop talking about Top Gun and stop thinking about it ever again in my whole life. So there we are. That will conclude our coverage. Oh, it's not a masterpiece, by the way. Neither of them are.
I think, in conclusion, I'd just like to say, save your strength for your court-martial.
We will return with some not Top Gun. Bye!